Hello, this is Michael Ray. Welcome to the Redstone Science Fiction Story Podcast. Today's story is the winner of our Accessible Futures Contest from 2010, Lunar Voices on the Solar Wind by Nick Wood. Nick is a South African clinical psychologist and writer who's published stories in several markets, including Inner Zone, Infinity Plus, and Albedo One. He is pursuing an MA in science fiction and fantasy through Middlesex University in London. The story will be read for you by Amanda Fitzwater, who does a great job for us here at Redstone Science Fiction. All right, everyone, let's get started.
Lunar Voices on the Solar Wind by Nick Wood. The lunar rover rolled to a halt in the shadow of Shackleton Crater, and a chill entered Pulani's bones. His suit had registered a drop of 250 degrees Celsius on his visor display within just a few minutes. He could well imagine the sparse, rare ice locked within the crater's frigid soil on the other side of these walls, gradually being mined and piped back to the base. But the full extent of the temperature gauge crash had locked his throat with shock. He couldn't even speak. Baines could. "Give your suit time to adjust. They've built these bastards well." Pulani's helmet lamp kicked in, bringing the person in the spacesuit next to him out of the darkness. He could spot the Scottish solitaire stitched into the left side and could just make out her name underneath, perhaps because he knew it already and knew it well. Mary Patrick. Baines himself sat at the front, the driver and always in control, a voice crackling out of the dark. "We're out of radio comm from base now, as we haven't got any satellite relays in lunar orbit yet. Just listen." Pulani wanted to say something to Baines, anything that would get an affirming response, an acknowledgement. He felt very much a raw novice, but he could think of nothing impressive to say. So he reluctantly kept quiet and listened. There was nothing to hear in that long, empty silence. Nothing. Absolutely no sound. The silence seemed to want a voice, shrilling in his eardrums like thin, static radio whine. Perhaps it was a sub-threshold crackle in their interpersonal communication system, or perhaps it was just his ears straining for a sound, any sound. His lamp picked out the stiff, aloof back of Baines's sitting suit, and he noticed his helmet was craned back, as if Baines was searching the sky. Involuntarily, he slowly arched his own neck too, joints in the articulated neckpiece attached to his helmet groaning in his ears, although he knew no noise could be relayed in this frigid vacuum. It was then that he saw them. Stars. Thousands of sharp, brightly colored stars spattering across his vision, ice-cold and crisp red, yellow, blue. Not flickering, but steady, piercing and skewering something inside him, so that he almost winced with pain. Old light, many of those stars millions of years old, but burning so brightly still in this ongoing empty darkness. A flutter of two green electronic hands washed across his visor's comm display, top right. Mary had clicked her suit, and British Sign Language words formed from scalp electrodes reading her brain, registering her holographic visualization of how she intended to move her hands. He didn't need to read the tiny text translation below those flurrying hand shapes. Baines needed that. He didn't. "Beautiful, burning now, both before we be and after we be, yet not caring if we be." Holographic hands had glowed on "if," as if emphasizing the words. Mary was looking up at the stars, too. He half wished he could touch her real hand, so well had she signed some of the thoughts that danced around his own. But there was not even a hint of his other thoughts there, so he kept his gloves to himself. He knew it was crazy, but still he had also a sense of heavenly cattle feet tramping the sky, opening up holes of starry light, a way through to Inkosi Yepezulu, Lord of the Sky. That had been Grandfather's favorite story, dead grandfather's favorite story, Ukuwamba dead grandfather, who continues on. But he had to forget those stories. Science alone would keep him alive on this dead and dusty world. There! Baines pointed to the right, rupturing Pulani's silence and his thoughts. Pulani spotted a particularly bright red-orange star, but Baines rattled on without pausing. Mars, if you're lucky, you'll be chosen to go there. But first, you still need to show us what you're made of, and that you can manage this silence and isolation. Pulani could tell from the faint vibration in his suit that Baines had started the engine again. We're done. Let's go. Baines' voice crackled curtly, and Pulani winced. Mary at least would only see flickering hands in her visor screen from the translation software. She'd had a lifetime of silence, born and raised profoundly deaf. Her parents refusing her cochlear implants at birth. She'd told him on the space plane over, with not a hint of regret. I can handle this silence, Pulani thought. But why are you in such a rush, Officer Baines? He glanced up at the pinnacles of the crater walls, trying to spot the solar panel arrays in almost constant sunlight that powered the base, and maybe one day would provide clean energy to help save a crowded, heated Earth. But all he could see were gray walls and broken cliff faces, arching up and around to the nearby curved horizon. His eyes swung to look at the Earth, a blue-green marble hanging low on the horizon, beautiful, breath-catching, a magnet for his eyes. Then they were trundling out of the glare of sunlight again, and a torrent of words burst in with the glare and the heat. Rover 5, come in, please, please, this is urgent. 5, please reply. 5 here, Baines said. 5, return to base now, there's an SPE heading your way. Shit, said Baines, and Pulani jumped. How long? We spotted it just over 5 minutes ago, and it's big, X-class maybe. On our way, said Baines, and Pulani felt the buggy shudder as it ground into maximum speed. He was grateful for the seatbelts as the rover began to bounce and buck over smaller rocks hidden in the lunar dust. Mary palmed a button on her suit to communicate her thoughts, and hands flickered up on his visor. Good news not. Vomit rose in his stomach. He quelled it with a force of will, having heard it was possible to choke to death in spacesuits. What's an SPE? Solar particle events, said Baines. Not a good idea to be outdoors to watch one. Pulani checked his visor clock. Shackleton's shadow had been their furthest stop. They were just over 3 hours away from base, perhaps 2 at top speed. There was a sharp and stale stench in his nose. It took him moments to realize it was his own sweat. Stay calm, we'll miss the worst of the storm, said Baines, and Pulani remembered that Baines had both their vital signs up in his visor's LED display. Hands flickered across his peripheral view. 15 minutes for the first SCRs, maybe. He didn't want to know what an SCR was. Trust an engineer to assume everyone spoke in acronyms. The worst of it's still at least 2 hours away, barked Baines. We should make it back before then. Pulani was glad he couldn't see Baines's bio readings, if the bite in his voice was anything to go by. It was the longest 2 hours he'd ever known, and it was all he could do to stop himself throwing up. But then it became even longer. The buggy ground to a sudden halt, almost throwing Pulani forward against Baines. He bounced slowly in his seat against the tethering safety straps. Baines unhitched himself and turned to face them. Mary was busy with a display in front of her, gloved fingers poking at flickering dials. I'm finding it hard to breathe, he said. Someone else needs to drive. What's wrong, Baines? What can I do? Pulani unbuckled himself and stood up unsteadily in his seat. There's something wrong with both my primary and backup OPS air supply on my PLSS, gasped Baines tersely. I think... A burst of static tore Baines's remaining words apart. Numbers and signs scrambled momentarily on Pulani's visor display before blinking and disappearing. All he could hear was a faint hiss in his ears. "Hello?" Pulani said. "Hello?" He could hear no words, see no electronic hand signals, but he sensed a soft subliminal hissing that penetrated deep into his skull. Was that the sound of the sun in his ears, or perhaps even residual noise from the birth of the universe? He saw Mary helping Baines into her seat. "Get a grip, Pulani. Time to focus. Time to help." He took a slow and careful breath, a pang of isolation sparing him, along with a sudden sense of radioactive particles piercing his skin, poisoning his organs. He turned to scan the horizon, looking for signs of their base. The craters and scattered boulders with deep shadows dark enough to drown in looked unfamiliar and alien. He could see no sign of base, of home. Then again, it would only be a dust-covered door leading below a crater wall for maximal shielding, hard to spot unless you knew exactly where you were going. And they had no guidance now, no radio signals to reel them in. No rover tracks to trace, either. Baines had obviously been driving the shortest route back, focused by his deep, almost unique knowledge of this terrain. Mary turned to face him, and he could tell from the helpless hang of her arms she did not know where they were either. Baines sat strapped into Mary's seat, immobile. Pulani could not tell whether he was conscious or unconscious, dead or alive. Panic rose with the bile in his stomach. He focused desperately on one smaller craggy crater wall off to his left, wondering if he could reach it in a few bounds and leap inside to find a spot where he could hide himself. They could hide themselves against the sun's invisible rage. He stepped off the buggy and, with a further step away, braced himself for a run. But there, on the cratered wall, tall and thin, Grandfather stood with his old dog Inja by his side. Grandfather was shaking his head, even though he was 3 weeks dead now. The old man stood upright and pointed behind Pulani with his stick. Pulani could see it was the long nubkiri with which Grandfather used to walk and shake at stupid youngsters who were rude with their new city ways when they pushed him aside and failed to show him Halonipa, the elder respect due him. He was pointing back at the lunar buggy. Although he knew no words could soar in the vacuum between them, Pulani could hear the old man's voice ring in his head. "You're Amazulu boy, and a Matlala, with a job to do. Now go and do it." Pulani turned and walked back to the buggy. He knew he must hold on to the experience hardening memories within him. Negotiating peace through volatile communication conflicts on the training Antarctic winter base. "Hello to you too, Grandfather. Nice to see you again too." He hesitated by the rover, wondering where he should sit, what he should do. Mary was crouched in a seat, studying a laminated map. They'd warned him about this, about how massive solar particle ejections could disrupt electrical communication systems. He'd just never expected to experience it so closely, so intimately, and with such absolute terror, completely isolated in his hot, sweaty, bombarded body. They were dying as they just waited there. That he knew. An idea thudded into him, as if punched in by a high-energy particle. Pulani took a deep breath, glad his suit's oxygen and cooling system continued to run, even if he wasn't sure for how much longer. Okay, so he did speak 9 languages and was communications officer for the International Lunar Base. Now was the time that he should really earn his keep. He turned to face Mary, and he held his hands up, grateful that NASA had built such cleverly dexterous gloves in their constant search for maximizing working suit efficiency. Still, even so, as he fumbled a few words in the 9th language he knew, he wondered if they would be dexterous enough. Mary laid the map down and clumsily fisted some finger and hand positions back to him. Not still know where we are. She picked up the map and handed it to him. He took it with difficulty and peered at it. The shortest distance between two points was a straight line. Perhaps he could try and track a straight line from the curve of Shackleton to the base. But where exactly did the crater's shadow lie? The curve of the rim was kilometers wide, and Baines had been careering to avoid obstacles. Carrying on in the direction of travel would be a hit-and-miss affair. Hopeless. Mary was fisting signs in his face. Together we are. Together we hope. Baines, live still. Pulani smiled. Nearby, a dog barked. He'd recognize that bark anywhere. It was Inger, prancing in front of the rover, as if wanting to play catch. Yes, he definitely wanted to be chased and followed. He'd always pawed at the ground at the start of this game, just like that. But this time, he sneezed with the cloud of luna dust he'd kicked up with his paws. Pulani laughed and signed to Mary, "Drive you, I show way." He caught a shadowy glimpse of her expression before she turned to climb into the driver's seat. He knew he would never be able to tell her he could see a dead dog on the moon. It was madness, he knew, but he could think of nothing better than to point ahead in the direction that Inger ran, yelping with pleasure, hurtling through the air like a springbok in the lighter lunar gravity. Mary drove on, with an occasional turn of her head, checking the direction of his pointing through her peripheral vision. They drove for what seemed like an eternity, and still, even a dog shade tires. Inja slowed to a ragged jog and dropped alongside the rover, panting and peering in at Pulani. He stretched across to pat the dog, as he had when a boy, but he patted nothing but vacuum. Inja was gone. The rover crawled to a halt, a large boulder ahead obscuring the view. Mary unbuckled herself and turned to him, signing, "Okay, you? Forget way again?" He nodded tiredly, forgetting it was hard for her to see his face through his glinting visor. The moon felt empty, desolate again. Mary went to check on Baines. Pulani closed his eyes and listened to the faint whir of his oxygen fans. "Together, we hope." Old images, paintings and words floated in the darkness in his mind. He tried to hold them steady as light meteors ripped through them, solar storm particles in his brain. An old book he'd read had charged him with his first excitement about the moon, painted and spoken by a moonwalker from almost a century ago. Oh yes, Alan Bean, Apollo 12. What had he said again? The solar glare had bleached the lunar landscape, making it hard for them to see when looking into the sun. Pulani opened his eyes and looked across to his left, up a ragged sloping hill towards the sun. He unbuckled himself. "Where go?" signed Mary. She crouched over Baines. Baines breathed still, but almost conscious not. "Something to see," he fisted a reply. He leaped up the hill, bouncing unsteadily with the thrusting of his boots, bracing himself to slow and stop as Baines had taught him on earlier moonwalks. He turned to face down the slope, scanning the widened expanse of terrain with the sun blazing at his back. Left to right, slowly, surely, not even sure of what he might be looking for. There, a faint but regular pattern against the dust in this chaotic jumbled world. Just a bit further on and to the right of that boulder ahead of the rover. Pulani bounded down the slope carefully, aware he may have just been seeing things. Still, it was all they had. Mary was in the driver's seat again, waiting for him. Pulani pointed ahead and to the right of the boulder, preferring to jog ahead. It took him only 5 bounds. He braked to a dusty halt. It was a line of rover tracks. Galactic Navigator. That's the name of the particular bean painting which had stuck in his head. Easy to get lost, but all you need to find are tracks, your marks and patterns in history. Mary ground to a halt alongside him and gave him a sign for love, which was a bit like hugging herself. She then pointed at him. He laughed with a rush of elation and heat, clambering into his seat. "Which way?" he signed. "Haven't watched you sun's angle to grossly direction assess?" She gave him a flurry of signs and then turned to accelerate right along the rover tracks. Pulani looked behind him with difficulty at the receding hill. Grandfather stood there, waving his Nobkiri, with Inja howling to the earth. Yes, he knew they had told him to expect visual distortions in this alien land. Still, he waved. "Salah Kali, Grandfather." His sense of time drifted away after that. Mostly he closed his eyes and felt ill with the swaying and jolting of the rover as it bounced over the ragged terrain. But every now and then he opened his eyes, sweat dried in cold patches on his cheeks, watching Mary stare with certain and assured conviction. Relief shocked him as a dusty crevice opened up in the bottom of a crater wall ahead of them. Someone must have seen them arrive. Mary maneuvered the rover down the slope expertly, the buggy skidding to a dusty halt in the dark, cavernous airlock. Behind them, a large, dust-packed door ground closed, sealing out the toxic sun. Lights flickered on around them. They stopped and sat silently for a moment. Mary unhooked herself and swiveled round on her seat to reach across to Baines, slumped next to Pulani in his suit with his faded stars and stripes. Pulani realized, with relief, that there was oxygen being pumped into the room and that he could hear again. On the other side of the dark room, the airlock door blinked orange as the air pressure rose. Mary had twisted off Baines's helmet and was busy unfastening her own. By the time Pulani had wrenched his helmet off, the airlock was blinking green and Mary was leaning back, smiling. Baines was groggy, but conscious. He was limp, but grinning in between ragged gasps. Mary looked across at Pulani with a smile on her lips, helmet cradled in her lap. Red hair frizzed madly, electrode bugs hanging off her scalp like electronic lice. His own helmet finally off, he took a deep breath of rich bass air and then vomited, with great embarrassment, deep into his helmet, closing his eyes with shame. A woman's voice crackled over the intercom. "I'm reading your red exposure levels. You're all going to be sick for a while. I think you'll be okay, but I'm getting some sick bay beds ready." Pulani's mind played for a moment on the word think. There was no certainty in the woman's voice or that word. Still, he hadn't come almost 400,000 kilometers for either safety or certainty. He'd come here because of the call of the stars, and he'd seen them, and maybe heard and felt them burn deep inside him, and perhaps much more besides. He opened his eyes, his head turned to face Mary. She was signing. "Talking is Baines." He hadn't heard anything, so he looked over to Baines in confusion. Despite waves of nausea and an acid burn in his throat, he still managed to grin. Baines was giving them both a big thumbs up with a big hairy right fist. Behind Baines, a shadowy old man bowed, with one hand on a panting dog.
We hope you enjoyed that story as much as we did. A great job by the author Nick Wood and by the voice artist Amanda Fitzwater, who's a science fiction author as well as a voice artist from New Zealand who does a great job for us here at Redstone Science Fiction. Well, we look forward to seeing you guys here next time with our next Redstone Science Fiction Story Podcast.